Just who it is we think we are is an important question. It's a question framed by the origin stories we tell about ourselves as individuals, as communities, as nations, as a world. Origin stories matter. We know who we are and what we believe because of the stories we choose to tell and tell and tell again about ourselves. How did it all begin? Who are we? Who are our neighbors? How do we relate to all that is around us? Today's sermon is half story, half actual preaching, because let's be honest, the story is what you will remember anyway. This is an origin story from the oral tradition of the Potawatomi Nation in the Great Lakes region, as told by Potawatomi citizen and botanist Robin Wall Kimmerer, who, by the way, is brilliant. Get her book. She tells us, in winter, when the green earth lies resting beneath a blanket of snow, that is the time for storytelling. The storytellers of the Potawatomi people begin by calling upon those who came before, who passed the stories down to us, for we indeed are only messengers. In the beginning, there was the sky world. She fell like a maple seed, pirouetting on an autumn breeze. A column of light streamed from a hole in sky world, marking her path where only darkness had been before. It took her a long, long time to fall. In fear, or maybe in hope, she clutched a bundle tightly in her hand, hurtling downward. She saw as she fell only the dark water below, but in that emptiness, there were many eyes gazing up at the sudden shaft of light that had opened in the firmament of the heavens. They saw there an object, a mere dust mote in the center of that beam. Growing closer and closer, they could see that that object was a woman, arms outstretched, long black hair billowing behind as she spiraled ever closer toward them. The geese nodded at one another and rose together from the water in a wave of goose music. She felt the beat of their wings as they flew beneath to break her fall. Far from the only home she had ever known, she caught her breath in the warm embrace of soft feathers as they carried her downward. And so it all began. The geese could not hold the woman above the water so much for much longer, and so they called a great council to decide what to do. Resting on their wings, she saw them all gather. The loons, the otters, the swans, the beavers, the fish of all kinds. A great turtle floated in their midst and offered his back for her to rest upon. Gratefully, the sky woman stepped from the goose wings onto the dome of his shell. The others understood that she needed land for her home, and they discussed how they might serve her need. The deep divers among them had heard of the mud at the bottom of the water, and they agreed to go find some for her. The loon dove first, but the distance was too far, and after a long while he surfaced with nothing to show for his efforts. One by one, the other animals offered to help, otter, beaver, sturgeon, each in turn, but the depth and the darkness and the fear and the pressure, it was all too great for even the strongest of swimmers. They returned, each and every one, gasping for breath with their heads ringing. Some of them did not return at all. Soon only the little muskrat was left. He was the weakest diver of them all. He volunteered to go, and the others looked on, honestly, rather doubtfully. This was not going to go well. Muskrat's small legs flailed as he worked his way downward in the deep primordial sea, and he was gone a very, very long time. The animals waited and waited, the great ones and the small ones. The wise and the foolish, they waited, fearing the worst for their relative, and before long a stream of bubbles rose with the small, limp body of the muskrat. He had given his life to to aid this helpless human, to bring earth on which she could live, in which she could plant her food, where she could grow and raise her children. He had given his life to help her, and others noticed, even as they thought that all was lost, that clutched in his tiny clawed paw was a small handful of mud. Turtle said, "Here, put it on my back and I will hold it." And the sky woman bent and she spread that mud from the muskrat's poor dead paw with her hands across the shell of the mighty turtle. And she was moved by the great gifts of the animals and sang a song of thanksgiving for all that she was given, for the birthday of her new life. And she began to dance, her feet caressing that earth brought up from the depths, sacrificed for and given by the animals. The land grew and grew as she danced out her gratitude to them. And from the dab of mud on Turtle's back, the whole world was made. Not by Sky Woman alone, but from the alchemy of all the animals' gifts, coupled with her abundant gratitude. And together they formed what we know today as Turtle Island, our home. Like any good guest, Sky Woman had not come empty-handed. Remember, she clutched a bundle in her hand as she fell. That bundle was still in her hand when she toppled from the hole in Sky World. She had, you see, reached out to grab hold to the tree of life which grew there. And in her hand were branches, fruits, and seeds of all kinds of plants. These she scattered onto the new ground and tended each one, until the whole world turned from brown to green. Sunlight streamed through the hole from Sky World, allowing all the seeds to flourish. Wild grasses, flowers, and trees and medicines spread everywhere. And now that the animals, too, had plenty to eat, many came to live with her on Turtle Island. And all things flourished, living together in a world that sustained every spark of life, including the offspring of Sky Woman, who walk on the back of the great turtle, even still. You know, over the ages, the human relationship to this earth has always been profoundly shaped by the stories we tell about that relationship. Every single culture has its myths. Every great religion, to some degree, has its foundation in an equally great creation story, a narrative of first things, first days, that dares to explain what the place of human beings is in this universe. Every story of every great tradition and culture lays out some basic guidelines about the relationship between the creatures and things of the earth, and gives us some cues for how we are to engage as a part of the natural world. And so it is in the Hebrew Scriptures. Since this is a story you have likely heard, I will not tell it in full. Since the first book of the Torah in Genesis can't even seem to quite agree with itself on the parameters of the relationship between human beings and the natural world, I will leave that whole explanation for a different sermon. There are, in fact, two creation stories in the Judeo-Christian narrative, written by two completely different peoples, representing two completely different perspectives in ancient Hebrew society. They contradict each other in some rather important and sometimes glorious ways, but they have become one in the imagination of the Western believer over and over again across the ages. The central narrative of those two stories in the Genesis tradition of the Hebrew Scriptures, the central narrative that has captured the Western imagination and impacted the Western world most acutely, is the story of Adam and Eve, right? Of a rib extracted and a snake who whispered warnings in the ear. And while I won't unpack it all today, it is good to note that the other creation story in Genesis is a muddier story altogether. It is quieter. It is stranger. It tells us that we were scooped up from the clay of the earth, that the mud came first, and we came from it. And yet both those stories combine to ring over the ages in the ears of the children of Eve, They were grafted onto the narrative of empires, and those stories have long served to tell us that we were set forth to have rule over the earth and all of its creatures, that the beginnings and the plants, that the beings and the plants and the things of the earth are good so long as they are good for us, good to us, for our cultivation and our dominion. You may know the words. You may have the words dug down deep inside your soul, whether you want them there or not. Our culture certainly does. From Genesis 1 in the Empire's preferred King James translation, God created human beings in his image. In the divine image, he created them. Male and female, he created them. God blessed them, saying, "Be fertile and multiply, fill the earth and subdue it. Have dominion over the fish of the sea, the birds of the air, and all the living things that move on the earth." Our origin stories matter. The way we interpret them matters. And these were the creation stories that the children of Eve, at least the creation stories of the received Western tradition, these were the myths that the Puritans and the conquistadors carried in their hearts when they set out to subdue a whole new world. These were the myths that propelled Manifest Destiny, that quintessentially American idea that God wanted white men to have dominion over all the lands between the mighty oceans, between my home and yours. These were the myths that drove the whaling ships from the tiny New England harbors to fish whole species nearly to extinction before the turn of the 20th century. These are the myths that gave rise to the Trail of Tears, the myths that still today pump through the pipelines and carry us surging with entitlement into the Middle East in pursuit of more oil. These are the myths that tell us national borders and the dominion thereof are more sacrosanct than people's lives. These are the myths that teach us that possession is the same as righteousness when it comes to the land from which we rise and the earth from which we are born. The result of this particular mythos is what the great environmental activist Barry Lopez calls a culture that has become uninformed by, even hostile to, biology. Human beings' destiny, he writes, many people assert is alongside their one and only God who gave them the earth to use for whatever it might provide in the way of comfort and material wealth. That done, the old mythos says the earth would be abandoned, a rapturous departure, an empty warehouse. An empty warehouse, a season of pillage, an imagined departure for parts unknown for the pillagers. Myths and stories shape us. We make ourselves in their own image. We are formed by the limits of our imaginations, and our imaginations are formed by the stories we choose to tell. Robin Wall Kimmerer, a botanist and citizen of Potawatomi Nation, is in fact one among the offspring of Sky Woman. Her ancestors told that story of the one who fell from the sky and was saved by all the creatures of the earth. The creatures dove deep into unknown waters to make a home for her and for themselves, and the muskrat gave it all to bear a lump of earth in his tiny hand. The turtle gave up his freedom to be the anchor on which all things might grow. Some creatures dedicated to this mutual flourishing dove down too deep and did not come back up from the sands of all time. But they did it of their own volition, just as the geese chose to cradle her fall from the world above, where she pirouetted like a seed, a leaf clutching in her hand, the beginnings of a different world. Sky Woman had seeds in her hand when she fell. She had carried life with her, not dominion. She clutched that life tight to her, not so that she could hoard it, but so that she could share it. She gave life, seeds, cultivation, as a gift in return for the life given her by the creatures who gave their all. It is a creation story that places interdependence in the spot where Western interpretations of Genesis so often place dominion. It is a creation story which promises that all flourishing on this good earth is and must be mutual flourishing, And the story created the people in its own image. Even as the people told and retold the story, their sorrow took shape in the narrative and their gratitude. It is said that as Sky Woman fell, she was also carrying a child, a daughter who grew strong on the earth, brought up from the depths. She was loved by all and gave love to all beings, and in time when she died, still young, she was planted like another seed in the good earth. From her body, it is said that all the people's most precious plants arose. The strawberry grew up from her heart. And when the offspring of Sky Woman eat of its fruit, they remember all the ones they have lost, and they are grateful. Kimmerer, in her book Braiding Sweetgrass, reminds us just what happened when the bearers of these two stories, the offspring of Sky Woman and the children of Eve, came face to face together on these our lands for the very first time. And then they met, Kimmerer says. The offspring of Sky Woman and the children of Eve in the land around us bears the scars of that meeting, the echoes of our stories. And yet, we must remember that we are the storytellers. Just as our cultures are shaped by the mythos at their core, we are the creators. We are the ones who shape the stories. We have told and retold the story of dominion for far too long, and we tell it without even remembering from whence it comes and how it forms our collective understanding of who we are. As land is reclaimed by sea, as cultures are overtaken into one great and lumbering globalized whole, stories are dying along with submerged shorelines. Better ones, richer ones, once told by cultures from age to age who dared to believe that we were not only on the earth but of the earth, stewards rather than sovereigns, companions rather than controllers. Today, as the summer sun in this beautiful place envelops us in its glory, let us tell a different story to ourselves and to our children. A story about flourishing instead of dominion. Let us proclaim that we are servants of the earth and not its masters, that we are the bearers of seeds and not destruction. Let us proclaim a different way for the children of Eve and the offspring of Sky Woman, for the creatures and the plants and the beings. Let us tell a new story together where all of our flourishing is mutual.